This holiday season, give the gift of reliable news and beautiful music. A year-end contribution to WSHU helps us inform, entertain, and connect our community throughout the year. Your support makes all the difference. Please donate by December 31st. Give at WSHU.org, and thank you.
This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Crews are still working on major water main fixes in Waterbury. It's been almost 1 year since New York enacted congestion pricing. An iconic Connecticut restaurant is about to go nationwide. Plus, a Stefanik campaign insider discusses her decision to leave the race for governor of New York. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Crews are still working on major water main fixes in Waterbury following a catastrophic break that left the city without water earlier this month. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
Crews are currently working to repair the breaks to the water main on Thomaston Avenue, which has been closed to vehicular traffic for weeks. Mayor Paul Pernarewski says they had to shut off water to repair a part late Sunday night.
There was a leak in the emergency stop valve that had been put in. It bent a little bit at the bottom and water was getting through. It was working, but water was getting through, which was still filling the hole. In order to start doing the repairs, we had to get the water to stop flowing into that hole. Last night, we were able to do that.
Now, crews are working to repair the pressure line, the pipe, and then finally, the main. Officials say they hope to have the road back open again in 2 weeks. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
It's been almost a year since New York State enacted congestion pricing. That's the controversial tolling program that charges drivers extra to enter Lower Manhattan. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio has the details on how it's going so far.
Data from the MTA show about 72,000 fewer cars entering the congestion zone every day. Drivers who do are paying an additional $9 toll. That puts the MTA on track to beat its projection that the program would generate $500 million in net revenue its first year. Air pollution has dropped, according to researchers from Cornell University, including in the outer boroughs and Nassau County. Detractors still remain. The extra fee has squeezed some suburban businesses that require vehicles to move products or equipment into the city. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Sally's, one of New Haven's most iconic pizza spots, is about to go nationwide. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports it's planning hundreds of locations across 12 states.
255 to be exact, including dozens in Texas and Florida. Although the company says it's gearing up for what it calls a 1,000 location scale and wants to be, quote, the Chipotle of pizza. Sally's would easily leapfrog, then dwarf Frank Pepe's, which currently has 17 locations. Pepe's has been the most visible of New Haven's famous big three pizza places, which also includes modern Abitz. New Haven's distinct style of pizza has hit the big time in the past few years, with recognition from Barstool Sports founder Dave Portnoy, as well as a pizza-forward statewide tourism push that labeled Connecticut the pizza capital of the United States. Sorry, New Yorkers. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Coming up, inside Elise Stefanik's short-lived run for governor of New York.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose.
Slippery conditions Friday evening were responsible for a 15-car crash in Waterbury. Police and fire officials say two people were taken to the hospital and all cars suffered damage. Police say the cars were traveling south on Wall Street when they lost control and slid down the hill, causing the pileup. Fatal crashes are on the decline in New York State, according to the governor's Traffic Safety Committee. Newly released numbers show fatalities fell from 766 between January and October last year to 681 during that same span this year. Motorcycle fatalities also fell from 157 last year to 134 this year. The Connecticut Department of Veterans Affairs did not properly supervise overtime in 2022 and 2023, according to a newly released state audit. It also found the department did not properly oversee large purchases and expenditures. In response to the audit, the department agreed with the findings and said it would take corrective action. The search continues for a gunman who fired one shot inside the Trumbull Mall on Friday evening. Trumbull police say a group of teenagers got into an argument outside of Macy's when one pulled out a gun and fired. No one was injured. New York State recorded a record-breaking number of flu cases for the week ending December 20th. Health officials recorded more than 71,000 cases statewide and more than 15,000 on Long Island. Hospitalizations across the state because of the flu were up 63% over the last two reporting weeks. Connecticut is also seeing a spike in both flu cases and hospitalizations due to a flu variant. As winter brings frigid weather to New England, local veterinarians are reminding people that there are things they need to keep in mind to protect their pets from the cold. The New England News Collaborative's Stevie Chapman has more.
There's a simple way to tell if it's too cold for your pet.
We always tell people to kind of use your judgment. If you're cold, they're cold. If it's a cold day, you don't want to walk. This is probably a good day not to go for a long walk.
That's Liz Rosansky, an emergency veterinarian at Tufts University. She says people with really active dogs might find it tough to keep them cooped up, so she has this tip.
One of the most tiring things for dogs is to use their mind. So puzzle toys, hide and seek in the house, any of those sorts of things can be really helpful.
Rosansky says the thicker a dog's coat, the better it will tolerate time out in the cold. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Stevie Chapman.
Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik dropped out of the race for New York governor shortly after Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman emerged as a primary opponent. President Trump endorsed Blakeman's bid. Michael Cracker is Stefanik's former campaign manager, and he spoke with the New York Public News Network's Holly Kirkpatrick to explain why the North Country representative abandoned her gubernatorial bid.
So it was reported that you were, and correct me if I'm wrong, the campaign manager for Elise Stefanik's run for governor. Obviously, she dropped out on Friday. How did that go down? Were you part of the decision-making team and advising her to step down?
Well, I think to start at the beginning, Elise announced her campaign with some of the most united support that any Republican candidate running for governor has had in the party since Governor Pataki. A tremendous amount of energy. Near unity in the Republican Party, 58 out of 62 county chairs, historic support at launch. Unfortunately, we all knew going into this race that a primary was going to be a non-starter and that if we were really serious about beating Kathy Hochul, that was going to be mission one, was avoiding a nasty primary that was only going to waste resources and divide the party. I have no doubt that had she moved forward, Elise would have won a primary, but it would have made the odds of winning in November much less, and so in looking at the situation with the, a candidate emerging from Long Island, Elise said, if this is what the party's going to do is force a primary, then we need to be unified and I'm not going to create a primary situation. It's an unfortunate reality because I think we had a once in a generation candidate in Elise, but we now have to regroup and find out how we're going to move forward as Republicans to beat Kathy Hochul.
So just to be clear, were you part of that decision? Did you advise her to drop out, or was it her decision?
I think the ultimate, the most important voice in that decision was her and her family. And I think, we can get caught up in politics thinking about the mechanics, but there is a family aspect. She's a young mom. She's got a young son. And she was prepared to spend a lot of time away from home. But ultimately, with the prospect of a primary, she had to weigh the family piece of this very heavily and made the decision to forego a primary and spend more time with her family. And I respect it, and I wish her and her entire family nothing but the best.
Just to explain a little bit further, because non-politicos might not understand this. So you're saying you're confident she would have won a primary, but you felt that that was going to weaken your position in the general election. Can you explain exactly how? Is it the lack of fight, if you like? Is primary one step too far, or is it something to do with money?
No, I think it's a matter of resources, it's a matter of time, and it's a matter of then having to coalesce the party in June rather than February, as we expected. If you look back to the 2022 campaign, Lee Zeldin spent several million dollars to win a primary that was very avoidable and unnecessary. Those were resources that he didn't then have in the general election to take on Kathy Hochul. He had to spend time fighting a primary battle, which kind of keeps you to the right as opposed to moving to the middle so you can try to build your coalition broader. And it cost him time. And in a race like New York, or in a state like New York, where you need to be basically fighting uphill, you need just about everything to align perfectly for you to have a shot. And I think Elise brought a lot to the table, but a primary was going to be a drain on resources, a drain on time, and an unnecessary division when we couldn't afford it. And so while I am confident she would have won the primary, I think it would have made the chances of success in November that much smaller. And in a very narrow window to begin with, it was something that she knew we couldn't afford as Republicans, and ultimately made the decision to prevent a primary by getting out of the race. And now it's about the party unifying and moving forward behind a candidate that we think can bring the kind of resources that we were going to get with Elise's campaign.
So you're going fully behind Bruce Blakeman now?
I'm looking forward to a conversation about what Erie County's role is going to be in the campaign, and to make sure that we get the investment that we need to be able to turn Erie County red, not just at the governor's race, but down ballot as well. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the county executive, and I look forward to having a conversation with him and his team about their vision for upstate New York and how that affects his campaign.
That was Michael Cracker, chair of the Erie County Republican Committee and former campaign manager for Elise Stefanik, speaking there with Holly Kirkpatrick. On the other side of the aisle, incumbent Governor Kathy Hochul faces a Democratic primary in June against her own Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado. For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen to us on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And for even more from us, Instagram is the place to be. We would love to connect with you on there. We're easy to find. We're at WSHU Public Radio. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk tomorrow.